All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your hosts for today's program, Dale Thronberry and Bob Gould.
Here we are once again, 2019. I have to think about that, 2019. Well, this is the beginning of... I know. I'm trying to keep track of all what happened to the last year with right past, you know.
I don't know. I have no idea. Introduce yourself. Remind our audience who you are.
Oh, I'm Bob Gould.
That's right.
I haven't been here in a while, and I'm coming here with a good old Michigan cold, I guess you could call that a little bit. But anyway, I know we're going to want to get into the program because who do we have today? Dr. Rebecca Granin. What are we going to be talking about? The number one, in my opinion, China, and of course other topics, politics, etc. But China's going to be our number
one. I think it probably will be first and center, whatever they call it. And anyway, this is Dale Thronberry. I got to remind our listeners, especially for the people that are paying for our program, and I want to thank Legal Help for Veterans as being one of our primary sponsors out there, along with the American House Senior Living Community in Westland, Michigan, the one that's on South Fenoy. It's a great place. I just saw a big ad for them in the local Detroit Free Press, I think it was, $1,850 to live out there, and they'll give you meals and everything else to go along with it. And they have special programs for veterans. So check out American House in Westland, Michigan. Their number is 734-961-4782. We're also getting a lot of great support from our local veteran service organizations. VVA Chapter 310, this is a Charles S. Kettles chapter in Ann Arbor. The VFW, Post 423, and the American Legion, Post 46, all from Ann Arbor. I want to thank you for your continuing support of Veterans Radio. Thank you.
Well, I've got a few things. I want to thank all the kids, and I couldn't get a list in time, but next time I'm on the program, I'm going to get a list of the kids and the elementary schools around Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, that made those wonderful cards and the gifts for the veterans there at the hospital. Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas. It was really neat to see that stuff. It's really cool. Got something else here, and we're going to be mentioning this from time to time. I wish we still had Tim Workus, who's no longer with us in this world, folks. Unfortunately, he passed on a few months ago, but he sure kept us posted on different vet events, and I'm going to keep up as much as I can with his work. And going back over some of the things that he has had in the past, free or discounted tickets to local events. Vet tickets offer free or discounted tickets to sporting events, concerts. Visit their website. Anyway, get your pen, pencil, whatever. And you should always have this, folks, when you listen to Veterans Radio, because you never know what's going to happen here, right? So here it is for tickets, free or discounted. Go to www.vettix.org/REF/931412.
Just go to VetTix.
Yeah, well, I would think so. Why do they get rid of this other stuff on here? I don't know. You got something else, Dale?
But I have a great fundraiser is coming up on Tuesday this coming week. It's a Warriors and Caregivers United. This is an annual fundraiser for the Warriors and Caregivers. It's on Tuesday evening, January 8th, and it's at Frenchie Sidetrack Restaurante in Ypsilanti's Depot Town, actually their famous Depot Town, run from 5 to 9. There's going to be entertainment there. There's going to be, as I said, there's music. So it's great food, drinks, and auction. What more could you want? January 8th, 2019, come for dinner, drinks. French's Sidetrack Bar and Grill is going to give a percentage of all of their meals that night to Warriors and Caregivers. And this is something that's really important, folks, to make sure of, is the staff is donating their tips to the Warriors and Caregivers United. And this is a great opportunity. This is something that John Kinzinger and a number of Vietnam veterans in the local area have done to make sure that the Warriors and their caregivers, the spouses and families and so forth, understand and have a place where they can meet and talk through all of their issues and their you know, whatever it is that may be bothering them. And it's their children. They put on picnics. They put on dinners. They send veterans and their families off on vacations and all kinds of things. It's really a great organization. And I know that if Gary Lilly were still around, this would be something that he would latch on to 120%.
Sure.
And as a toast, I have a number of photographs that Gary took in Vietnam that was given to me by his family, and I'm going to take one of those tomorrow night for the auction.
Can we put those on the site? Can we put those?
I can probably figure out how to do that.
Yeah,
I have to talk with Tammy about that.
Give us that information again. Where's that being held? How much does that cost and all that?
It's free. But if you buy any meals, anything like that, a percentage of the cost of the meals goes to Warriors United, Warriors and Caregivers United. The staff is giving their tips to Warriors and Caregivers United. And this is Tuesday night, January 8th, from 5 to 9 at Frenchie's Sidetrack Bar and Grill in beautiful downtown Depot Town, Ypsilanti, Michigan. The other thing I've got to announce is that VFW Post 423, one of our sponsors, today was celebrating their 90th birthday of their organization, receiving their charter. So we want to say congratulations to VFW Post 423, and thanks for all you do for veterans around our local area, and especially for all these organizations.
Hear, hear. One last announcement coming from the Walmart Corporation. We've announced this before, but we're going to re-announce it. The Walmart Corporation announced a new initiative called the Military Spouse Career Connection. That's right. That's going to be for military spouses. They are, even though the unemployment rate is very low in this country, under 5%, with military spouses, it is up in the 25-30%, and they want to do something about that. So while the soldier is spouse is deployed, the other spouse can be working with the Walmart folks. So how do you find out about this? Well, you go to Walmart.com. That's it. Isn't that simple? Walmart.com. And keep hiring those veterans.
Yeah, they've got Walmart has a great veterans hiring program out there, not for veterans and for their spouses. And you think about how many times, especially in today's generation, when there's only 1% of the population in the military, and how many times they move from base to base. It's really difficult for the spouses to find employment that's meaningful and so forth.
And that it can transfer too.
Right, that you can go from one, in this case, you could go from one Walmart to another one. And so we want to thank Walmart for doing that. It's a great, great program.
Okay, that's it.
Ready?
That's not it for the program, folks. That's it for segment number one. We'll be right back, and the band's standing up. They're getting ready, and don't go away. You're going to come back with Dr. Rebecca Grant. Boys, give her the gun. Oh, boy, every time I hear that, don't you feel the same way? Give her the gun, man. Speaking about the gun, there's going to be a lot of tales of the gun. We're going to be talking all about China, the Air Force, initiatives, politics. Where do you think we should start, Dale?
I think we should introduce our guest first.
I think that would be a good thing. Dr. Rebecca Grant. Dr. Rebecca Grant is president of the IRIS, that's the Independent Research, a qualified small woman-owned business, and they're specializing in defense and aerospace research and consulting. Dr. Grant is also a contributing editor for Air Force Magazine. I think I'm going to get up, this year. I'll get subscribed to that, okay? She served a 3-year term as the founding director of the Mitchell Institute. And Dr. Grant has appeared on TV as an expert on air power. She also has a PhD in world finance from the London School of Economics. Dr. Grant, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. We're going to have an exciting 2019 and so many international issues to talk about.
You've started our year program for, I think this is number 8, right? Number 7, Dale? Number 8, something like that.
At least.
And
it's great.
And it's always, where do we start? And where I'm going to start today is that I'm going to start with China. And the reason being is that it's a country that is so much in flux, and it has so much to do with world power, world politics, that we can't ignore it. And the problem is, as I looked at my own file, I got a skinny file because I don't know much about China. And I think that's the way that we all feel about that. So now, starting today, and we're going to be doing a number of programs on China and what it means to be in Asia. But before we get going on that, let's start with the China today. And if I look back on some of the things in the past, is that in the 50s, we expected China to fail. Yes, they're going to fail. The communist government, this is going to happen. It's not going, but it didn't. It worked. So, or did it work? We're not sure. Dr. Grant, tell us about that.
Bob, you picked the right place to start with China. We saw some really big changes in the U.S.-China relationship in 2018, and we're going to be hearing a lot more about those. I think the biggest change is that we used to think about China primarily as a rising economic power and as a rising military power. Well, you know what? They've arrived. China is a serious regional military power, and they are trying with a number of development programs to extend their Air Force and Navy, their ability to use drones and cyber and all sorts of things. But the most dramatic example is that they have taken over an area in the South China Seas. These are little, not really islands, but little reefs and rocky outcroppings that are claimed by several different nations. China's gone in there with huge ocean-dredging ships and done landfill and created a couple of runways. And then they added some radars, some buildings, and electronic warfare capacity, some fuel storage. And what they basically have is a little militarized set of bases down in the South China Sea. That's been going on for a few years, but what's happened this year is two big things. For the first time, they flew in a Chinese long-range bomber into one of their bases. It didn't stay, but that was a very obvious sign that they're wanting to control more of that area and to keep the U.S. out. And the other thing that happened was back in October, a Chinese ship came within 45 yards of one of our destroyers. That is way, way, way too close.
Mm-hmm.
And now China has accused the U.S. of putting too much military pressure on China. So really the swords are drawn, and back in December, a Chinese admiral at a convention talked about what it would take to sink U.S. aircraft carriers. So the military relationship has ratcheted up a whole notch over this past year, and we're going to see more of that in 2019.
I saw, there was an article, hi Rebecca, this is Dale.
Yeah.
I saw an article in when I was looking at the news today. It's talking about this. China reveals a new top secret military spy drone that says it can patrol hostile environments without detection. Do you know anything about that?
No, that's what everybody wants, the ability to patrol hostile environments.
Well, yeah, I know we've been trying
detection.
That since the U2s.
Yeah. And they've been working on and displaying a range of drones. So what they're talking about there is a stealthy drone shape that can patrol, and you know what they want to patrol obviously is the Western Pacific and look for ships and things. Typically China will have maybe a prototype or a few articles of this, but it'll be a while till they have enough of them to be a real threat. But the thing is, it's every year there's something more. You know, they didn't used to have any aircraft carriers. Now they have two, and the keel's been laid for a third one. They do have a full range of drones. In fact, they sell drones to other countries. They have an Air Force that's developed a lot. It has stealth fighters. They say also, Dale, that they will be unveiling a stealth bomber probably sometime towards the end of 2019. Now, we know from our own experience that the aircraft unveiling sometimes take a little bit longer, but that would be a really big deal, not least because due to their theft of intellectual property from American defense companies,
mm-hmm.
it's almost certain that they've stolen some of the technology and techniques that are going into the drone you mentioned or into this new stealth bomber we're hearing about.
I keep Dr. Grant, I keep seeing this ratcheting up. Where's it all going to stop? Where's it going to end? This is to not China's benefit, not to our benefit. Where are we? Of course, you can't predict that. But where would you think might be the, how should I say, the ceiling, or to where the, here's the line in the sand and this is the way it's going to be? What do you think that could be?
Well, first of all, I think it's going to continue for a long time. And probably the best outcome is that both sides deter each other. The real question is, you know, the ball is in China's court. Do they want to be a responsible world power and get along with others in the international system or not? You know, what they've said they want, and the reason they've built up their military, is that they want to extend their control out to what they call the nine-dash line, which is a really old map feature, and it basically means that they want to control a lot of the territory around the South China Sea and beyond. And they feel that that they have the right to be there and to not have the U.S. Navy or others sailing in that area. But they're international waters. And every other country in the world, even Russia, respects the fact that these are international waters. So it's about whether China, over time, is going to decide to be a responsible member of the world community. Now, they are, in some ways, they've been helpful with North Korea at the UN Security Council, but this is a much bigger issue. And then what's new from 2018 is there's a new dimension in this conflict, and that, of course, is the trade and tariff war mm-hmm. now going on with China.
I was talking with a friend of mine who has a degree in Chinese studies. We were talking about the future with China and Taiwan. Started out with Formosa. Was China turned into Taiwan? He said that China will step in and take over Taiwan. What about that?
I remember Formosa as well from reading in history, and I had an uncle who was a Marine and stationed on Formosa early in his career. The Chinese have said some very interesting things about Taiwan in the last few weeks. One of their generals said that they could take it in 100 hours with only a few dozen casualties. Now, they've been maintaining that for a while, and, you know, we've known for some time that, you know, of course, Taiwan is where the nationalist regime, our allies from World War II, that was where they ended up with Chiang Kai-shek. It's been independent from China since that period of time, but definitely we see more tensions there. Between Taiwan and China, again, we have international waters, and sometimes our Navy sails through there, which is perfectly allowed under the law of the sea, but China doesn't like it. So they are continuing to threaten Taiwan, and what they really don't want to see is Taiwan becoming too independent or militarizing too much. So I think they're going to hold fire and continue to remind us that Taiwan is very close, but I think they're going to hold fire there. I think if we see a confrontation, it's probably more likely to occur down in the South China Sea. But right now, the real fight is over trade and tariffs. Mm-hmm. And also over whether we'll see China participating in what we call the 5G network, which is the next generation cellular network. One of their companies, Huawei, is a very big provider. And we've seen Britain and other close allies have their intelligence chiefs come out and say, stop, we cannot let Huawei participate in our cell networks any longer. Here in the U.S., we made that decision a few years ago. So there's really, really big questions, and now in the, not only the military dimension, but these other spheres of competition, and also these all relate and connect to one another, of course.
Do you, you know, one of the reasons that they don't want to manufacture, I guess, with the phones is that they're afraid that they're putting chips into these phones to record conversations and everything else. Isn't that what people are afraid of?
Exactly. It's if the Chinese make it, because under Chinese law, a big company like Huawei, even though it's a big international company, it makes more smartphones than Apple, right? Even though that's the case, they have to cooperate with Chinese intelligence agencies. And so the Chinese don't care whether they follow international rules, right? So if you have a device or a router from Huawei, there's a potential for it to be corrupted and used by China for collecting intelligence, military intelligence, business intelligence, personal data, you name it.
Well, I think that's one of the things that many of us are concerned about. I mean, it's as more social media becomes more and more prevalent, and you know, it's just so invasive all the way around that the lack of privacy everywhere. It seems like there's always some sort of major corporation being hacked or some government agency is being hacked, and all this information is out there. So I don't think it's an unrealistic worry.
That's quite right. And in the case of China, we have a great many examples. In fact, the FBI recently unsealed an indictment that was done in New York of two Chinese nationals who were in the Chinese military accused of hacking going back to 2006, and they've hacked every major U.S. company. So, in fact, it's the hacking and the intellectual property theft that is the reason that the U.S. Treasury Department has put the tariffs on China. And there are, it's an amazing list, there are 5,745 items that are under this tariff. Now, we're in a 90-day waiting period to see if the U.S. and China can work some things out. We have until March. If there's nothing, and this was happened when Trump and Xi Jinping met at the G20 summit back in December, and they agreed to give everybody another 90 days. If there's not a resolution by March, then these tariffs may go into effect. And this has completely freaked out China's leadership, because no one in the West had pushed back until very recently. So they are truly reconsidering, you know, what is their strategy going forward. Interesting, too, China has a weakening economy. They have some financial over-leveraging. Their stock market is down quite a bit, and they're going through a down economic cycle. So China's leader Xi Jinping is finding out it's not that easy to be a global leader.
Right, yes, even, you know, the kind of their quasi-capitalistic communist society is having some of the same issues that pure capitalism has anyway.
Right, and they remain, in terms of the society, a very strong communist core to that, and Xi Jinping has reinforced this. We've also seen, unfortunately, some crackdown on religious organizations within China. And another very interesting dimension, Vice President Pence spoke about this in October, we've seen a deliberate Chinese effort to increase their propaganda offensive in the U.S., and they specifically are looking to drive a wedge between federal and local policies. This has come about as a result of the little trade war that's going on. Right. But again, we now have so many more dimensions to this China conflict, and it comes at a time when they really have built up their military and made it a much bigger challenge for the U.S. and our allies in the Pacific.
Now, some of these tariff issues could we have taken that to the World Trade Organization rather than getting into this snowball fight back and forth, or is the World Trade Organization toothless?
Well, the WTO can be quite effective, but it's a long, long, long process. And so the decision was made by the Trump administration to just go direct in the bilateral channels and to single out these, like I said, over 5,000 items for potential tariffs. I think the hope long-term is to do a more comprehensive trade deal with China. So the World Trade Organization is really good at resolving disputes like between Boeing and Airbus or between the U.S. and Canada over commodities, things like that. But they're not really there to set parameters. And what we've failed to do with China is to get China to agree to play by the rules of the WTO and the developed world. And there's pretty strong bipartisan consensus in Washington that it just didn't work, that letting China in 20 years ago, we hope that that would lead to more cooperation, better standards, respect for international law, and it just hasn't. So as much as the WTO can work on specific cases, I think it really requires the U.S. and some of the other G20 nations to rethink what they're doing. You know, Britain decided to kick all the Huawei systems out of its emergency response system. Canada, who is debating how to do their 5G cellular expansion, is trying to decide whether or not to let Huawei participate. And in the midst of this, China goes and detains a couple Canadian citizens. So, you know, stupid move, right? So it really is a matter of, can China take its proper place among other peers in the world and be a responsible stakeholder. So certainly this is pushing the issue. I think we're on. I think this is an adjustment that needed to be made. And like I said, there's pretty good consensus in Washington that the old strategy wasn't working. We need to try something new. So we'll see in 2019 how that works out. I expect the military tensions to be a little hot during that period of time while Xi Jinping and Trump and other world leaders really get down to the brass tacks of what China's role will be.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Grant, take a break. We're going to go on break in about 1 minute. Right, so you will have yourself a glass of tea, cup of tea, whatever. And Dale, what do you think about all that?
Well, I thought, you know, obviously it's very interesting to have an expert like Dr. Grant on that knows exactly what some of these things are indicating. It looks like we're kind of at a he said, she said type, or now it's he said thing, where they're pushing against each other. I think when we come back, I'd like to find out more about what America's military is doing to counter what the Chinese military has been doing. And to see if we're building ships and planes or are we falling behind.
Well, I don't know. We're going to find
out. Well, I know you don't know, but we'll find out.
We're going to find out.
Yes.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio, Dale and Bob. Don't go away. The only piece the guys know. They're playing that one again. I do want to say something, folks. If you want to hear Dr. Grant's blog here, right? You want to read Dr. Grant's blog. Whoa. Go to All Things Pentagon. And that's at www.irisresearch.com. Let me do that again. irisresearch.com. And her blog is All Things Pentagon. Keep up to date and know about all that stuff. Dale, you got it?
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to make a comment. This is kind of a little off topic a little bit. In listening to the news where the president is asking for U.S. Steel and so forth to make, you know, to come up with a design for this wall. Remember, we mentioned this earlier when we were having, a beverage. Anyway, the idea would be that we should have naming rights on these walls
now. Naming rights. I love it.
You know, and it could have U.S. Steel could own part of the wall and Walmart. Walmart, yeah. And Halliburton and Blackwater and all these other things could have, you know, name a piece of the wall. And I bet the money would be there instantly.
This wall part is brought to you by...
Yes, and then we could get that part out of the way, and then we could get back to opening the government, maybe.
Derek, get the Pentagon on the line.
No, right? You've got a Pentagon expert right now, All Things Pentagon. You remember? You just introduced
her. Okay, Dr. Grant, what do you think about that?
I have to say one fortunate thing is that Congress did manage to pass the National Defense Authorization Act. So the military part of the U.S. government is up and running. That's a good thing.
Right. Yes. We're just hopeful that they can work out a compromise amongst themselves and see what happens with that. My question to you, we're talking with Dr. Rebecca Grant, who is our All Things Pentagon expert that has introduced our yearly first program in January show for many years
many
now.
Years.
And it seems that whenever we talk about in January, it usually comes to fruition by the end of the year, which is gets a little scary sometimes because you know what you're doing. You mentioned that we had passed, you know, to keep the military operating. What is the military doing to keep up with the Chinese? I don't want to stay on the Chinese too much longer, but the idea is, are we building more aircraft? Are we building more ships? Are we, you know, how are we, you know, coming back at them?
Dale, that's one of the great legacies of Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, who has left a couple days ago, is he has refocused our national defense strategy on rebuilding to face Russia and China. You know, the number one part of that starts with our allies in the Pacific, whether that's Japan up north, down through Australia and New Zealand, and all along in that region, that we do this with allies. Japan is particularly important with their forces, and they have built up quite a bit. But our U.S. military forces are trying to work in a couple of key areas. One is Navy ship modernization, also buying more aircraft like the F-35 fighter to replace older aircraft. We want more stealth aircraft. The Air Force's super secret B-21 long-range bomber, which will be out on the flight line in the not too long after 2020, in the mid-2020s. That's a big part of continuing this deterrent. But there's another set of things the military is doing as well, and that is really deepening our expertise in cyber warfare and surveillance and longer-range weapons to include hypersonic weapons and the new research in laser weapons. So we need force structure and the advanced technology to counter China's military buildup.
Well, it's not just China's military buildup, is it? Is Russia trying to do the same thing? I know that their economy is not as, you know, not as strong, but are they increasing their military presence?
Russia has absolutely increased both its military presence and its military operations around Europe and, gosh, just everywhere else. So Russia has tested a couple of rather nasty missiles. One is a cruise missile that has, they say, has a hypersonic final stage, which makes it very, very difficult to intercept. Not impossible, but more difficult. And then Russia has also built up its military forces. They are rehabbing some of their long-range strategic bombers. They sent a few of them down to Venezuela recently. They are also increasing their aircraft production. And as we know, they are at war in the Ukraine. They are creating trouble in other parts of the Black Sea. And we have actually had to really expand U.S. and NATO forces in Poland, who is a NATO member, in order to counter the Russian threat. So Russia alone, really, really working hard. And, of course, they work in the unconventional sphere as well of electronic warfare and cyberspace.
Right. Yeah, we're all well aware of what they can do with their with that.
We have relied currently on the triad. We have the Navy, the Air Force, and the Army. So just to let folks know a little bit that things aren't quite as dire, that we do have an the U.S. have an advantage in the Navy. You want to tell us about that?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And you know, and I want to make clear that our U.S. number of armed forces still number one in the world, and one of the big reasons is the quality of the men and women who serve in those forces. Another one is the experience that we've had. Most of our forces are very seasoned from operations in the Middle East. You know, if you are someone who's been in the military for 5 years or 8 years or 15 years, your experience has included rotations through combat zones, quite likely. So, absolutely. In the Navy, we are still the force that has the aircraft carriers, and that is something that continues to annoy the Chinese. The aircraft carriers are a really big part of the deterrence in the Western Pacific. Also, where we are completely dominant are Navy submarine forces. And now, Bob and Dale, that includes manned submarines, but we also see a big expansion of Navy unmanned underwater vehicles as we strive to dominate the undersea realm in the Pacific. There's some super secret stuff, and I don't know all about it, but that is a very key area of competition and a big area where we are well ahead of the rest of the world.
Whoa, that's a scoop, folks.
Could be. We didn't hear
that one. All right, Derek? Okay, yeah, he's shaking his... Well, we're just talking about the triad, and maybe we are going to have to change it to quadrad because something is coming up now. I haven't heard much about it, just a little bit. The Space Force. Is that going to be our fourth dimension? Tell us about that.
Well, with the fourth dimension, there's a Space Force proposal. So this could be a big event of 2019. And under the Trump administration's current plan, the Space Force may stand up as soon as October 1st of 2019. So to roll this back, you know, this was a big surprise to a lot of people, but there had been some activity within Congress to look for a separate branch of the Space Force. President Trump requested in the spring of 2018 that Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, Marine, start to stand up a Space Force. So what's at question now is how that will happen. And one of the big proposals is that it will be, well, first of all, we will probably see a U.S. Space Command come back. We had one until the early 2000s. Then we'll have a Space Department. Now, that may be a sub-branch of the Air Force, like the way that the Marine Corps is a separate branch but sits under the Department of the Navy. There's also a question about how we'll do space development. You know, you've seen Elon Musk and others, Blue Origins, developing commercial space launch and also doing the rapid space launch for the government. So big questions about how we're going to build things there. But driving all of this is the need to counter China's extremely aggressive capabilities in space and also some activity by Russia.
I have to close my mouth. I'm closing my mouth. No, I just, in the articles last week, I guess it was, where China landed on the far side of the moon. At least they say that they did. I mean, again, you know, conspiracy theorists can have a ball with this kind of stuff because, gee, we can't see it over there. Did they really go there? But, I mean, if they have the capability of doing that, that's, to me, is the most concerning part of it.
They absolutely have that capability. And kind of a new thing is that we have the ability to watch them do it. So, whereas we, you know, no one else had that ability in the 1960s and 1970s. One of the key things about space today is maintaining space situation awareness. It's a big mouthful, but it means watching other people's satellites and maybe warning them if they are on a collision course, also watching space debris, and then watching other space activity. And unfortunately now, you know, we're in a position where satellites are vulnerable. It's not, you know, you can knock one out of orbit, you can nudge it, a satellite can hit a satellite. So space is a contested domain.
It's pretty crowded up there.
Well, very, very crowded. And, you know, the Air Force operates about 75 satellites. Half of, you know, 30 of those are the global positioning system, which is how we all know where we are with our phones, and then communications, weather, and then, of course, the very precious missile warning satellites that use infrared to watch for launches out of, you know, North Korea
wherever they may come from.
But it's a small number of people. You know, there are only about 13,000 people, including the uniformed Air Force and contractors who work in the space area. So it's very, very elite force. And I think what, you know, the good thing about the Space Force proposal is that it puts attention on the need to develop U.S. space capabilities so we stay ahead and defend those precious assets.
Whoa, Space Force. Moving right along, we got to look at a few other things here. I think we have said enough about China.
For today.
Not for the future, but just for today.
For today.
We got enough. And remember, all things Pentagon, you can get that. But let's talk about a few things real quick going on. North Korea, real fast, what do you think?
Well, first, Bob and Dale, you have been bringing up North Korea longer than any program I can think of. You saw the threats there initially. Interesting point. I expect to see another summit between Trump and Kim Jong-un. This deal that was discussed in Singapore in the middle of last year is really all about whether Kim Jong-un wants to trade nuclear weapons for economic development. Does he see that as a way forward? We have a U.S. Special Envoy, Steve Biggin, who has been carrying out some very intensive, very behind-the-scenes negotiations, and it's really slow progress. This is the last Stalinist dictatorship. But North Korea has agreed to a few small things. They've tentatively agreed to let inspectors back into North Korea. It's not going to happen real soon, but they've tentatively agreed to that. And what they have to do next is really produce either an inventory of their nuclear systems or a plan for bringing out some of that spent uranium fuel rods. Great thing that's continued is no more missile tests. They did not quite finish testing their long-range arsenal. They needed to do about a dozen more shots with better downrange telemetry. Thank heavens they didn't do it. We don't want them to do it. So what may have happened is over the past few months, we've had enough behind-the-scenes diplomatic progress so that Trump and Kim can meet again and go to phase two and the denuking. Meanwhile, relations between North and South Korea have continued, sports teams, business initiatives. So the tensions there are much, much better than they were, and hopefully there's enough momentum to get through to a really meaningful denuclearization. We'll see.
Right, but it still has to go through China. Is that right? I mean, it'd be North Korea. Still, everything has to go through China.
Yeah, China has a big role here, and because the pressure, of course, is coming from the UN sanctions, and that's China, Russia, and the other Permanent Security Council members. And, of course, China has the big border. They're the client state. But here's the thing. You know, China never made North Korea wealthy. So Kim Jong-un sort of has this choice that he can step forward and become more compliant with the international order and experience great economic development. President Trump keeps talking about this. So does President Moon in South Korea. So in a way, you know, North Korea's usefulness to China is somewhat at an end. And now with the big tariff and military issues we talked about, the relationship is so much more than that. So, you know, I think Kim Jong-un really has that choice here. Is he going to make a choice to become part of the international order and see a bright future for North Korea? He gave a New Year's speech that indicated that he might do that. But again, it's slow progress. Last Stalinist dictatorship, nothing is going to happen fast.
No, that's for darn sure. You know, Dr. Grant, you're an expert in everything. I wanted to ask you about, you know, what's going on globally as far as national security is concerned. We're still living with all the breaches of security with, you know, both political parties and some government agencies and so forth. Do you see anything, changing, or are they working on making everything more secure?
Well, you know, I may not be an expert, but I do have an opinion on everything. I mean, I think in terms of making, you're talking about making the cyber systems more secure,
yes,
and things like that. Yeah, yeah. What ongoing problem? And, you know, we talked about Russia's cyber capabilities. It would be really hard to overstate them. They are really very good and very evil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we're seeing that we have to move beyond what we've considered safe. You know, the internet was never designed to be a secure system in any way,
right?
So, you know, so what's required is we have to have more secure software, but we have to go beyond that. We have to have the whole systems themselves be secure. There are just so many ways to get into almost any system. If you're plugged in, you're vulnerable. And mm-hmm. I think we see some recognition of that. You know, the military has some great private internet systems that allow them to transmit data. But even there, they make sure to have plans for doing it if cyberspace goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody expects that any future conflict would include a cyber attack immediately.
Sure.
And we've seen that over the past 10 years. We've seen examples. So we know that we can depend on it, but we also have to be able to fight without it.
Now, the reason I brought that up, I was just thinking about all those people in Congress that really don't have a clue, mostly my age group, that don't have a clue of how the internet and how all these things operate. And so, their concerns may be out there, but they just don't understand it at all.
Oh, it is. And it's so complicated. I mean, gosh, you know, and it changes so quickly. But, mm-hmm. but what we do have in the military now are some fantastic cyber operators. You know, we have cyber commands in all the services, and there are some you know, military members who would just blow your socks off. I mean, mm-hmm. incredible in what they can do. And in fact, you know, the Air Force has decided to increase its cyber capabilities, and it's become also an area where we like to see the National Guard participate. And we'll often the mm-hmm. service branches will use Guard members who have civilian jobs in that area. But absolutely, the cyberspace component is very, very key to all military operations.
I agree. You mentioned, I'm going back a little bit here. You mentioned an Air Force plane, F-21?
The B-21.
B-21, I'm sorry. B-21. Is that to replace the B-52?
Well, you
maybe,
know, we might
sorta,
defeat that
B-52,
but it's going to join the B-52 and the other bombers. So the B-21, and it's got a great name. It's going to be called the Raider.
The Raider?
Because of Doolittle's Tokyo Raider.
Yes. Right, yes.
In homage to the Doolittle raid launched off the deck of the USS Hornet, the first strike on Tokyo in early 1942, heroic, big morale raiser. And so this will be called the B-21 Raider. It's a and it's a stealth plane that's being built by Northrop Grumman in under an incredible veil of secrecy. You know, not least because of the cyber threats and the competition
right, yes.
China and others. And it will phase in, and but I think we'll see some B-52s around. I don't see the end for the B-52, let's put it that way. And the Air Force has said they might just keep it a real long time.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I mean, I've seen B-52 strikes, and they really do scare the socks right off of you. And I can only imagine, is the 21 supposed to be bigger or carry more bombage or tonnage, I guess would be
the
term?
You know, the B-52 is such a unique design, and it's so fuel efficient in the way that it operates. So the B-21 will look a lot different. Mm-hmm. I imagine the tonnage will be about the same, but you know we don't know any of that yet. Really, they haven't released anything on the designs. But one thing that all bombers will do in the future is carry standoff weapons as well. The B-52 remains an important part of the nuclear deterrent, along with the B-2, that very small force of stealth bombers. So we'll see the B-21 entering into the that part of the nuclear triad, but mm-hmm. also, of course, carrying conventional weapons. And eventually we'll see that B-21 doing the bomber rotation out in the Pacific that now the B-52 and the B-2 do to assure allies and deter adversaries. So I think, you know, we'll have a really bright future ahead for the B-21. It'll be a stealth bomber with some really advanced stealth and electronic warfare and other things that will assure American dominance
right.
in the air.
It sounds like it. You mentioned standoff weapons. What is that?
Right. Those are missiles that are carried by the bomber but launched perhaps several hundred kilometers away from a target. We have them already, things like the air-launched cruise missile, both in a conventional and a nuclear format. And that allows a bomber like the B-52 to continue to have a weapon that penetrates into defended airspace.
Let's talk a little bit about Syria, since it was first and foremost on the front pages not too long ago. So we are pulling out of Syria. Now, President Assad has long been supported by Russia. And is there something going on here that I'm missing? Or can you comment on that? Are we weakening ourselves in Syria against the Taliban? What about all that?
Syria. I wish, can we show like a map and have a half an hour to explain all the different parts of that? You know, the situation that we see today is Assad, as you rightly state, Bob, Assad has control of most of the country, the area where U.S. forces have been working with the Defeat ISIS coalition, which has over 70 nations involved. France, right. Britain, you name it, they're in there. That is the northeastern part of Syria above the Euphrates River. During 2018, our forces conducted what they call Operation Roundup, targeting the remnants of ISIS. So the caliphate is gone. They're into the caves. 99% of the territory has been reclaimed. This is a lot credit to the Syrian Defense Forces, which is a group of Kurds and Arabs and others who have been fighting against ISIS. In early 2017, President Trump decided on the recommendation of Secretary Mattis to add 2,000 advisors on the ground. They got the ability to go in a little closer with the Syrian Defense Forces and coach them and help them execute their tactics. It's that 2,000-person group that is going to come out gradually. Mm-hmm. What we're hearing, though, is that it's not going to happen until we finish some negotiations with Turkey, who, of course, has the border right there, to assure a better arrangement and better security for the Kurdish forces on the border with Turkey. We are also probably going to see Syrian government forces come into that northeastern area.
I was curious about that because it seems like we always seem to leave the Kurds out of the equation.
Right, and that is a Kurdish area. And, you know, I think the one thing to, two things to remember. One, our military forces there have done a really good job, and they've done what military forces do best, and that was defeat a lot of really bad ISIS bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the reason that we extended operations up into Syria in the first place, back in the 2014-2015 timeframe, was to retake Iraq. It was to make sure that the ISIS could not use that corridor of eastern Syria to put pressure on Iraq. Remember, ISIS was very close to Baghdad.
Right.
All that's been achieved, and given that most of the territory is gone, I think that's what's driving this decision. Turkey is a very important NATO ally, and Turkey just can't take it anymore having a big armed Kurdish group on the border.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex situation. There are not a lot of good choices, but I want to point out really that the forces we've had there on the ground have done a great job, and the air power is not leaving. They did 500 strikes in the last 2 weeks of December.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they are all staying. And we also have forces in Iraq, 5,000 forces in Iraq, and quite a bit of air power around the region. So, and the Defeat ISIS Coalition, of which NATO is a part of it, as I said, about 70 countries, that's continuing. So we need to see the Syrians start to stabilize Syria, get some of the refugees back, get humanitarian aid going.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we're just about out of time. Dr. Grant, where you, do you have something coming up where you're going to be appearing, anything in the near future?
Oh, you know, I am actually, you can catch me on TV in the Smithsonian's Air Warriors in the next week or so. They're running a program on the Hellcat, and I'm filming one tomorrow. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the program today. And, of course, you're going to be back, right? Right?
Yes, I'd love to come back. I love you guys. Thank you.
Well, you have, and your family, too, a Dale. Happy New Year. And
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. I'm anxious to find out if all these things come to fruition about midway during the year. We'll find out how we're doing.
Well, you can find out by tuning in next week. Until then, you are dismissed.